Well, this morning we're going to listen to a presentation on some work I did. It's my first job when I got out of college several years ago. And this has something to do with the Sahel. And the Sahel, as you can see, is in the middle of Africa there. It's about 3 million square kilometers in area, and it covers about 400 to 600 kilometers wide and nearly 6,000 kilometers long. If you define it in terms of rainfall, it has an annual rainfall of 10 to 20 inches. And this zone is really prone to degradation. Now, the causes of this degradation could be the recurrent droughts that we've had in that region for years, and then the increased human and livestock population. And this sets a chain of reactions in progress, and just if you have more people, you're going to have overcultivation. Then there's overgrazing because we have a lot of livestock. This results in deforestation, and then, of course, going down, there's degradation of the structure, and there's excessive runoff, erosion, and then fertility decline. The farmers in this area, they are very sensitive to that problem, so they are aware of the gradual decline of the croplands, loss of vegetation. And they are also aware of the long-term degradation that has entered a cycle of self-perpetuating decline, and that it exceeds the capacity for repair or the rebuilding of the structure and other things. And so they are attempting to use indigenous practices that is within their socioeconomic limitations to arrest the further degradation. Now, researchers have been in there in terms of trying to find out what we can do to help. Sometimes they use this reductionist approach whereby they, these trials tend to be site-specific. The boundaries are defined by ownership, and that also the patterns of farming systems are what they use for boundaries. But I think another approach there is the holistic approach where we consider the social structures, the people, and it also involves the dynamics of ecological processes that goes on along across the landscape. So we started this project in a village, small village called Hamdelai, which is about 45 kilometers from Niamey, with the capital. And this is just at the right here, and it's very good, so we could go there every day if we have to. Now, the landscape configuration for this area is characterized by these lateritic plateaus and with these deep sand valleys. Now, because of the degradation of these plateaus, there's excessive runoff during the high intensity rainfall. That leads to the creation of incipient gullies on the side slopes. And there's always flooding downslope. Now, there's a village here. This village has been moved almost 5 times because of the flooding. And then the material eroded during the flooding creates these alluvial fans and these berry seedlings every year. Now, if you look at the top of the plateau in terms of vegetation, we have the tiger bush. And by the way, this is not where the tigers hang out, but it's just based on the type of vegetation we have here. If you look at it from the top, it looks like the tribes of the tiger. But this is where we have alternating bands of vegetation and bare ground corridors that are just parallel to the gentle contours that we have on those slopes. And the tiger bush vegetation covers about 22,000 square kilometers of Sahelian Niger. Now, the functional effect of this vegetation pattern is that the runoff from these bare corridors here, and that's, there's very low infiltration there. They look like parking lots. And this distributed in the vegetated bands. So this forms like a natural water harvesting structure. And also water and wind-borne sediments that come from the upslope positions accumulate in the upslope portion. So there's always an upward migration of vegetation of these vegetated bands. And this actually represented the ecologically stable system in there, and this controlled the hydrologic function. But with time, there's been degradation of this area. Now, if you can see, this is a picture we took in 1960. The vegetation is intact. In 1992, we see a lot of fragmentation of the vegetation, and this actually destroys the hydrologic function. And this is because we've been cutting the wood and we are also grazing. Now, because of this flooding and the problems the farmers are having, this pushed us to do this project, try to see how we can stop the gully formation. And then, but the farmers was advocating for us building these huge structures that will block the flooding. But we thought that was not possible. It wasn't economically feasible. So we wanted to come up with a hypothesis. And the hypothesis was that if you could reverse the tree, we can replant the trees and the shrubs that were there originally. We can close those gaps that have been created because of degradation. And so the primary objective then was to determine if the hydrologic functions of the degraded portions of the banks could be reestablished through reforestation. And then by using very inexpensive way that could also facilitate autogenic succession of vegetation. So the first of all, we also wanted to know to determine the degree which the treatment could recover soils to resemble those that were there within the original vegetation. So we started with a very simple structure called the microcatchment, and the French call it the digette. Now we excavated 1 meter by 1 meter by 1 meter, and we threw the material in the middle. Now the slope is this way. So water that runs down, it collects in here, in the straight through. So we put a network of these on the plateau. That was a lot of work, but it was really exciting to see that. And then we had to come up with a type of crop plant that we could use. But we had to get some attributes. First of all, it has to be easy to establish, and it has to grow rapidly. And then it should, the perennial growth form will also help with making sure that the environment is, the amelioration of the environment is affected by the wind-blown sediment, because data shows that the wind-blown material tend to be richer than what is in place. And then it should also have an extensive root system so that it can be effective in nutrient cycling. And it should be resistant to both drought and flooding because of the way we structured it. And it should also be very, very untasteful to livestock, because if you leave it there, because of the free-roaming livestock, they'll eat everything. So it has to be resistant to browsing. And it has to be multiple purpose, so the farmers can use it for other things. So this is a sequence of activities we effected. In 1991, we established the microcatchments. Then we planted this Acacia holoceraceae, the Australian Acacia, which is not native to the area, though. But then we planted in 91. Between 1991 and 1996, we had an agreement with the local community to limit grazing. So the camel, the cattle, the sheep, and goats were not allowed into the experiment area. And then the herders, who are the Fulanis, you can't stop them anyway. They're going to come. But then we have to negotiate with them to take it easy, not to destroy the trees. And then no fuel or construction wood, dead or alive, was allowed to be taken over. So in 1996, we allowed the community to go in to harvest the dead wood. So this is the evolution of trees. This was 3 months after planting the Acacia holoceraceae. This is 15 months after establishing this. But I think what even got us excited was the autogenic succession of these native grasses that were not there. You saw the area, how it looked like. And now with these grasses coming in, that presented an opportunity for the herders to use for grazing. And this is 124 months. This is how the original one vegetation that has left on there, and this is what we could transform the area to be. But this area that was not treated, so you can see the difference. Now, we tried to put some numbers on this, so we wanted to look at the tree performance. So we took some native vegetation, native shrubs, that is known to that area, the Bohemia rufescens and Sisyphus mauritiana, and compared the performance. First of all, we look at the survival rate, and it looks like the Sisyphus wasn't surviving very well, but at least the Acacia was very comparable to the Bohemia. When you look at the plant height, the Acacia really dominated all the other two with the time that we did the experiment. We also realized that a very favorable microenvironment was created by the effect of the trees. We realized that if you look at this area here, there's a collection of the dust that comes in, and this is being trapped by the leaves. And the leaves, because it's very high tanning content, it does not degrade very fast. So it stays there for a long time. So it creates this microenvironment where we had a lot of biocast. And this also helped with infiltration rates on areas that were like parking lots that nothing will grow there. That was really exciting. And also, this created the microenvironment where we planted the local trees, and they also were doing very well compared to an area like this. We also look at the chemical properties. We could see that within the area that we planted, the pH went way up, all the way from 1991 to 2003. The somewhat basis, same thing. We are creating an environment that is good for continual growth. Now, when we look at the bare corridors, there's nothing in terms of basis. Then the extractable phosphorus. This is where I think I need a graduate student to work on this, because we were expecting the phosphorus to be high under those vegetation, but it's not. And this is something that we have not come to grasp with, and I think this is an area that we need to study. Total carbon, of course, because of the excessive litter, we were able to accumulate some carbon under those trees, and that was very positive. So if you look at the long-term impact of this project, the farmers in the region have independently adopted this practical recommission procedure because they feel it's very easy. It's just a matter of digging the holes, harvesting the water, and using the water, the nutrients, the dynamics that are very favorable to create these micro catchments, and then plant the seedlings, and it will change the land use pattern. And I was talking to Dr. Rangi about 2 days ago about the impact, because this is an area that was very bare. Now you can see this area with the greenery up from the air, because the seeds are self-propagating. And we said we wanted a mortal purpose tree. Those farmers can use the seeds of Acacia holosuracea, grind it, and brew it like coffee. They get their wood, they get their coffee, they get a environment that is protected, and we win. Number two, this project was used to train for human resource development. We have these students, Steve Marantz. He had his MS in hydrology and watershed management working in there, and now he went ahead to Israel and got his PhD working on dryland environment. And Ford Drescher had a PhD, a master's in pedology, looking at landscape analysis. She was the GIS expert. Justin Hale had his soil physics, also worked in the thing. Catherine Grahama had a PhD in soil chemistry, working in that watershed. Then the local scientists, we have Zangina, who went ahead to Morocco and had his master's. Then Mohammed Ganda, he is now working for ICRISAT. He has a PhD in soil physics. Then we have Isaka Mahaman, who became the director general of the institute to work with, and he also had his PhD from Purdue. I thought that was a great achievement. Then my first assignment I was telling someone in Niger was to go and set up a lab through Texas A&M. This lab was established because we wanted to use it to support the activities. So we acquired the equipment, we trained lab personnel, and then we did the identification of appropriate methods for the region. This lab continues to be serving the analytical needs of the sub-region. This project also became a model for many soil management projects. We had the Intercrypts. That was an offshoot of this project, and this was based in Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, Cabo Verde, the Gambia, and Mali, and Senegal. Then also formed the basis for the formation of the Sanren CRISP, the Sustainable Natural Resource Management CRISP that is being managed by Virginia Tech right now. In conclusion, we can say that this watershed scale approach to ecosystem reclamation has been successful. Number one, the hydrologic function was restored in the manner that is ecologically and also economically sound. Farmers could identify with it. The restoration was sustainable. The people in the watershed continued to use it. And this concept was also transportable because it can be self-replicated in the initial, in the immediate communities, and this has become a conservative practice that is being used both within Niger and outside in the Sahel in West Africa. And lastly, we've been able to create infrastructure that is used continues to serve the needs of the people. And of course, human resource development is something that every project is trying to do, and we're able to go on out there, create students who have gone on to be productive careers in agriculture and natural resource management. Thank you very much.